This is Wrestling Informant Radio, WrestlingInformant.com. How's it going, everybody? Gary and Chris back with you for another week, another show. Wednesday, October the 15th, 2014. And Chris, how you doing, pal?
Doing great, man. How you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Before we get started, because we do have a guest today, real quick, I want to remind you, as we do every week, that we do have a membership option that we offer. You know, look, we're an ad-free wrestling website. Those are few and far between in the wrestling world, and all we ask is, if you like what we do, if you want to support us, we do offer membership, completely optional, because we are ad free for everyone, no matter what. But if you like what we do, if you want to support us, we have a membership option, $2.99 a month. And what you get for that $2.99 is very simple. We offer you additional podcasts throughout the week. I normally cover Raw and various news, and lately I've been covering the Monday Night War series on the WWE Network. Chris will jump on every week and give you a good NXT and Ring of Honor report. He actually did 51 minutes for members talking about those two very things in a recent indie show that he attended, the St. Louis Anarchy show.
So yeah, it was good.
Definitely recommend that. I always learn a lot every time I listen to Chris's coverage of Ring of Honor and NXT and all that stuff. So check that out. And then also, we have an extensive archive of shoot interviews that we've done over the years, dating back to 2007, Chris, 2007.
That's a lot of history there.
People tell me, they say, Gary, you always give the plug, but you never tell us who we can find in this archive. It's so mysterious. All right, well, I'll tell you. There was an interview we did back in 2007 with John Heidenreich that gained quite a bit of traction. It was highly controversial, just following the Chris Benoit murder-suicide incident. He was talking very candidly and openly about, you know, being in WWE and all these different things. Just so many different interviews. We had Buff Bagwell on twice, and coincidentally, both times he caused a crazy amount of controversy.
Yes, he did.
With the things that he discussed, you know, saying stuff like CM Punk is too small to be a world champion and all these other things. And I could just go on and on. Bob Holly, Road Warrior Animal, Bobby Lashley, times like six. We've got a lot of interviews in this archive, and we highly recommend that you guys check it out. It's some good stuff. So once again, it's WrestlingInformant.com/membership. And the final plug before we get to the actual meat of the show today is give us a rating on iTunes if you want to. We would appreciate it. You know, it helps us out in the rankings. We do appreciate those that have taken the time to do that. WrestlingInformant.com/iTunes. Go right there. Leave a review if you like what we do. We've gotten some nice reviews previously, so we do appreciate that. Now, with that out of the way, Chris, I know this guy is banging down the door. He's ready for me. He's like, all right, guys, bring me on. So we're going to bring him on right now. He's like, damn it, why won't these guys shut up already?
Hurry up.
I know. We have Michael Kingston of the Headlock Comics. Michael, how you doing today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on again.
I know it's been a while. The last time we had you on was the back when we did the shoot, and that was last summer. I'm looking at it right here. August the 25th, 2013 was the last time we talked to you, and I remember that day very vividly, Mike, because we had a lot of technical problems. I remember it was on our end, not on your end. It was on our end because Chris and I were idiots and using Wi-Fi connections rather than hard line connections, and we'd ask you a question, and it'd be like 40 seconds, and then we would be able to hear your answer because of just the delay with the Skype and all that stuff. But I have a good feeling today, Mike. I have a good feeling we're going to have a much better go-around this time around. So I think we'll be all right.
I feel good about it. I feel good about it. I think we're going to be good.
Okay. And Chris, for the record, how do you feel about it? Let's just get everybody's opinion.
I feel a heck of a lot better than I did last year.
Very good.
I think we're going to be fine.
All right. So, Mike, the website... let's just get this right out right now. The website is headlockcomics.com, right?
Yeah, that's our main website. Obviously, the thing we're driving people to is the Kickstarter, which is kickstarter.com.
Yeah, and actually, we made a short link for that. It's a little bit easy to remember for everybody, and I promise you, Mike, it doesn't go to our site first or anything. It goes right to your Kickstarter. But wrestlinginformant.com/headlocked, if you type in that URL, like I said, it doesn't even go to our site. It goes directly to your Kickstarter campaign. And this is your second go-around with the Kickstarter, correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, we did one last year. That's what I was promoting last time. And it's a good thing for us. As an independent, you know, it helps us get enough, essentially get enough pre-sales to be able to fund the production of the book.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about the last time, because as we were talking, obviously it was still going on, and you're doing pretty well, I remember, and you're doing well now. But talk a little bit about how, you know, meeting the goal, how it changed kind of, you know, your life and what you do, and what you found out about the whole crowdfunding experiment. Because I guess that's kind of ultimately what it was. It's kind of an experiment to see if you could get your stuff out there through the crowdfunding platform.
Yeah, it's, I always say that Kickstarter is simultaneously the best and the worst thing that I've ever done.
Really?
I mean, obviously it was very successful. And we were able to produce a 155-page book that is beautiful and I think would stand up on the shelves with any comic book on the market.
Right.
But that 60 days, I tell you what, I'm a real, I don't know, I don't want to say emotional guy, but you know, like you feel it the entire time. I mean, I check my email like every 5 minutes, sometimes less than that, because, you know, you get email notifications when people pledge. You know, it's a roller coaster. I mean, you really want people to pledge, and sometimes people back out, and that's like a kick in the gut. So, you know, it's been successful. I'm pretty sure this one's going to be successful for us, but I tell you what, that 60 days is no joke. I gain about 15 pounds in stress weight.
Yeah.
it's a rough thing. Like, there's no amount of banging the drum that'll ever be enough. You know, to get people, you know, because I have the readers. I mean, I know what I sell at shows. I know what I've sold to people. And
right.
The emails I get, it's just sort of hurting them into this one area, because this is what really makes the book happen for us. This makes us, you know, this funds the production. It allows me to pay the artists and pay the printers, and allows us to get the book out, you know, in a timely fashion. Otherwise, you know,
yeah,
I have to wait as I sort of slowly earn the money through my, you know, my regular job and through convention sales and whatnot. So this lets us bring content to people faster and, you know, lets us sort of compete with the big boys.
Yeah, I think what people really need to understand here, because I feel like some people, sometimes they don't get the whole Kickstarter thing. And that is, like, if you're listening to this right now and you say, maybe you've never heard of Headlocked or whatever, and you're saying, man, it's Mike Guy. I really like what he's talking about here. I'm thinking about supporting. What people don't understand is, if you don't reach the goal, you get nothing. And so this is why it's very important, you know, to go right to wrestlinginformant.com/headlocked. It goes right to the Kickstarter page. And if this is something that interests you, I would encourage everyone to make a donation right now, because if this guy does not reach his goal, that's it. And that would ultimately be a heartbreaking experience, I can only imagine. But we're not even going to think about that. We're going to think positive, because last time you made it, I know you're going to make it this time. But people, they need to understand that, like, if you don't meet the goal, you get nothing. And we can't let that happen. We are not going to let that happen.
No way.
So,
and I don't even want people to necessarily think of it as a donation, because in a donation, usually you give something and you don't get anything back. For us, it almost functions like a pre-order mechanism. You know, in the comic book world, books come out through previews. And 3 months before the book comes out, you order what you want, and then it comes to stores 3 months later. And this is kind of our previews. That's kind of how we're using it. You know, for people that pay, you know, for different tiers, there's different rewards. You get something at every level, $5 and above. But, you know, we're producing a 160-page book with art and stories by comic book heavyweights. And, you know, for $25, you can get that mailed right to your house as soon as it's completed. And that's, you know, if you were to buy six, you know, it's almost seven comic books worth of material. If you were to buy seven comic books at a comic book store, it would probably cost you more than that. So, you know, ultimately it's a bargain, and it really helps us out. You know, some people wait to get it at conventions, but obviously if we just did New York Comic Con this past weekend and we sold a ton of books,
right?
But our table is almost $1,000. So, you know, $1,000 of what we sell goes to fund that table. So, you know, that's $1,000 that we don't get to put in the production of the book. So, you know, Kickstarter, the sales, everything that we get through Kickstarter as a sale or as a, you know, as a backing it goes into the production of the book, and that's how we're able to make it. And, you know, I think the people that have been with us since the beginning have noticed a real increase in quality, you know,
right,
from the first book to the second book in terms of production values and stuff. And, that's a direct result of people that have supported the Kickstarter.
Now, out of all these different reward levels that you have, once you pledge a certain amount, what have you found to be the most popular thing? What do people seem to like the most of what you've got offering here?
Well, everybody wants to be drawn into the book as a wrestler, and it's insane. I mean, those things go right away. I mean, they're actually all taken now. I mean, we still have rewards for people to be drawn into the book in cameo roles, but the ones to be drawn in as a wrestler were gone within a week.
Wow.
Doing it's cool. You know, we use their facial likeness. We create a wrestler around them. There's like a jobber level. There's a champion level where people get, you know, two guys can be half of the tag team champions. And then there's, you know, the sort of, you know, regular, you know, sort of mid-card level. And you get a sketch of yourself drawn by my artist, Mikhail Molopolo, who's a wrestler from New Zealand, mm-hmm. which is, you know, it's kind of neat. Like, you know, in addition to being featured in the book, and you get a print, you know, of a page that is, that you're featured on, and you get a sketch, and you get a copy of the book, and you get a t-shirt, and, it's a really nice package, and they go quick though.
I can only imagine. I mean, that sounds really cool. Now, you mentioned Comic-Con. I wanted to ask you about that. Talk about this kind of Comic-Con culture and the connection that wrestling fans make to it. And, you know, because you go to a lot of these things, and, you know, how much do the comic world and the wrestling fans kind of connect? Explain that to me, because I've never really understood the Comic-Con culture. Like, I could sit here and talk wrestling with you all day, but when it comes to the comic side of that stuff, I mean, I got to be honest with you, I'm not a big expert about it.
I mean, they're almost pop culture cons now, for as much as they're called comic cons. I mean, there's celebrities, there's wrestlers, you know, everybody's just out there. There's video game companies. It's a little bit of everything, you know. I mean, I think the Comic Con name is sort of almost a holdover from what it was, but now it's a little bit of everything. So, I mean, I'm an independent. So if I go to a comics based Comic Con, like say Baltimore Comic Con, like I don't necessarily do as well there because I'm considered an independent, and you know, comics are very brand-based, you know, publisher-based, much like wrestling is very, you know, WWE-based, and everything else is independent.
Right.
But at a pop culture convention, I'm more likely to find people that are open to other types of things. Like, New York Comic Con is probably the biggest or the second biggest pop culture convention behind San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
And those shows, I do tremendous at. We were nonstop at New York Comic Con. I had Jerry Lawler with me and Hurricane Helms, and
that's got to be a big help too.
The entire time.
That's got to be a big help too, having those guys over there. I mean, my God, people are probably like just waiting to meet these guys. They're like, oh, you know, what's this cool headlock thing you got going here? And did you find it? You found like a lot of people that may not have heard of your stuff, and they kind of just they were there to see Lawler or whoever, and they just kind of picked up your book and like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Oh yeah, I mean, 95% of my sales are done like that. I mean, that's how we get noticed. Is, you know, people come to meet Jerry or people come to meet Shane, and then you know, they get a look at what we're doing. Like, oh, what's this? And then I give them my pitch, and that's really been sort of my model to get noticed. Because, like I said, you're always fighting a battle for awareness and brand identity when it comes to wrestling and comics. So. You know, that's definitely sort of my guerrilla way to, you know, get in front of people, which has worked out fantastic. You know, I have so many guys in the business that love comics, have been so great to help support me, come to my tables, contribute artwork, contribute stories, you know, because they believe in what we're doing. So, you know, obviously Jerry and Shane and Rob Van Dam and Daniels and Kaz, John Morrison. You know, we had Scott Steiner at our table at San Diego.
Oh,
you know, all these guys, Ken Anderson has been a huge supporter. I mean, everybody's been super, super nice and super supportive. You know, they get what we're trying to do, and they recognize the sort of giant uphill battle that we're facing. And, you know, we wouldn't be anywhere, you know, half of where we were without all their support. So I'm always super grateful for that.
Definitely. Do you kind of like, you know, consult with these guys? You know, when you're writing your stories, do you maybe call one of these guys up and try to get some advice on, you know, where to go with the story? Or are these stories kind of all you for the most part?
The stories are all me. The only thing I've ever asked anybody was if it was possible for one guy to set up a ring by himself. That was the only question I had to ask because I wasn't sure. And I got varying opinions from different people. So some people said yes, some people said no. Some people said, you know, if they did, the guy's a dick that made you do it. So they all agreed on that part. But.
Right. That's cool, man. Chris, what do you got, buddy?
No, I was just going to go back to the whole Comic-Con phenomenon because, Gary, you said you're not that familiar with it. I go every year. I go to the St. Louis Comic-Con every year.
Show off.
And it is, yeah, it is more of a height. It's not necessarily, because what I see a lot is you see the guys putting out the comic books, and then you see, what I see more are the artists and guys trying to sell their t-shirts, merchandise, and then you got the celebrities. So it's not really so much about the comics anymore. So I can understand where it's kind of a problem, where it's this huge hybrid of entertainment, pop culture, celebrities, everything like that. So I just throwing that out there that I definitely, because I had that perspective as a wrestling fan going for certain things, but then I kind of branched out to see, you know, guys like yourself trying to get the name out there to the comic book readers, and then you got the artists and things like that.
And that's, I mean, it's a you know, the market's always changing, and you know, there's definitely a lot of chatter in the comic book business about how, you know, conventions have left comics behind, and I don't agree with that statement. I think that there's people that have just done the same old thing, and they've been doing the same old thing for 20, 30 years, and, you know, the people's tastes are evolving. There's new generations and whatever, and I think you got to do something different to stay relevant. I don't think there's anything like what we're doing on the market. You know, and I think that we have a very specific target audience that we can reach. I don't think the book would only appeal to that target audience, but obviously it's an easier sell to wrestling fans. But, you know, you just gotta stay moving. You can't,
right?
Especially in this day and age, you just gotta keep moving and doing what you're doing, you know, otherwise you'll get stagnant.
Right. And I think the key word there you hit on earlier was evolve. I mean, it's just evolved over time. And I think that's really helps that you got something that's this unique out there. 'Cause it is very unique. Even though it's wrestling and comics, it's still, there's definitely nothing like it.
No, there never has been, and that's the thing. I've always been a fan of both things since I was 8 years old, and I've never seen a good wrestling comic, you know?
No.
I've always been sort of licensed things that, you know, somebody thought they could make a quick buck when wrestling was hot, and you could tell that the people that were writing them weren't wrestling fans or, you know, didn't really get wrestling, and they were just sort of hacking it out to make a buck, and, you know, the difference between Headlock and that, I think, is everybody associated with our book is passionate about wrestling and passionate about comics and, you know, that sort of thing. And that's where, I think that's what sells our product, I think. You know, and that's why it's good for me to get out in front of people, because I think, you know, everybody's always skeptical when they hear the word wrestling comic because they think of Ultimate Warrior stripping Santa Claus naked and whatever else. But, you know, but I think once I get to talk to people and they know where I'm coming from as a creator and, you know, the fact that I've managed to get endorsements from all these guys and contributions from all these guys, you know, it's usually a pretty easy sell after that.
Right on. Did you mentioned getting into comics and wrestling around 8. Did you kind of get interested in both around the same time, or did one come before the other?
I had comics from very, very early age. And I had, like, superhero themed games and playing cards and stuff, you know, probably as long as I remember.
Right.
But I mean, in terms of hardcore collecting comics, like when I got like into it, it was probably about the same time. Wrestling was definitely, was the very first Saturday Night's Main Event. And it was, George the Animal Steel who, got my attention. And I was able to, you know, from then on, I never stopped watching it. I had a brief time in comics where I got out in college because it's almost impossible to collect, you know, when you're living away from home.
Yeah.
On a campus. But then I, you know, as soon as I got out, I put my collection back together and just kept going.
Ah, very cool. Well, you mentioned a Saturday Night's Main Event. I mean, they got all those up on the network finally. Do you subscribe to that? Have you gone back and watched some of that stuff?
I do. I do subscribe to the network. I watch a ton of stuff. I also love watching. I know they're getting the Memphis Library on, you know, WWE's buying the Memphis Library from Jerry. So,
oh, cool.
I'm definitely looking forward to that because right now I watch a lot of Memphis stuff on YouTube and I love the old stuff. I have definitely gone back and watched that Saturday's Main Event on more than one occasion. you know, some days it's just, you know, you need a little inspiration, you know?
Sure. Yeah. I would imagine that having the network's got to be a bit of a help now. I mean, even YouTube probably to the same degree in terms of being able to go back and, you know, maybe if you're kind of wanting to dig into the old days for, like you said, some inspiration. I mean, it's got to help out tremendously.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not something that's, you know, I mean, wrestling isn't done like that anymore. So, I mean, there's a lot of really cool wrestling ideas and presentations now, you know, beyond WWE, but nobody sure. really does old school wrestling. So,
no way.
You know, there's definitely, it's enjoyable to be able to watch it and still be able to, you know, see what holds up and what doesn't hold up. And I think it's fascinating.
Is that what you kind of model your stories around, is kind of that older type of you know, style of wrestling? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you're not writing about Dean Ambrose sliming Seth Rollins or anybody sliming anybody for that matter. But, you know, I mean, do you kind of play more to the older stuff, you know, for inspiration when you're writing?
Well, most of the focus on the wrestling in the book is the main character learning the wrestling business. So,
right.
You know, it's... You know, in the last book that we did, he finally, you know, our first book, he was trying to get into wrestling school. You know, in this book, he's actually learning the business. So he's running the ropes and taking bumps and that sort of thing. So it's not, you know, the main wrestling federation is sort of modeled on like 80s WWE, because I think more than anything, that's what people think of when they think of wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, when you ask people who don't watch wrestling, you know, oh, I watch wrestling. And they're like, oh, that Hulk Hogan stuff. That's
yeah.
usually what people yeah. say. So I modeled it after that. Where we're located right now in the story is the book's called The Last Territory, and that's where he is. He's in the Last Territory down in Texas. It's based around a kid who made, he won this town their only high school football championship. And you know how big high school football is in Texas.
Oh, of course.
So after he quit high school, or after he graduated high school, he became a wrestler, and they built this company around him, and now it's, you know, it's 30 years later, and he's still the top star, and he's still, you know, coming to the ring in his varsity jacket and whatever. But that's literally the only place in the world where he means anything. So it's essentially the last territory. So we're sort of exploring some of the old territory stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, sort of dealing with sort of current wrestling, you know, corporate wrestling politics at the same time.
All right. Well, that plays kind of right into where I'd like to go next. Kind of a two-parter. Your opinion, what is it in today's kind of wrestling that's really clicking for you? And this could be any company, but what are some of the things that are really clicking with you today? And then the second part, obviously, would be, what are some of the things that's not really clicking with you that you feel like could be improved upon?
I mean, I love independent wrestling.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's, you know, I think there's all different kinds of presentations. You know, I love to see people do different things with the medium. I mean, just like I'm doing a comic book, but I'm not doing a superhero comic book, you know, so I like, you know, I have a lot of admiration for people that are doing wrestling that aren't doing WWE style presentation. You know, I think Chikara is fantastic. I like Hood Slam out of Oakland. I think they're really onto something. You know, and it's totally different. You know, I think Beyond Wrestling is doing some cool stuff. You know, and I still have a soft spot for Ring of Honor, because, you know, if it wasn't for like 2004 Ring of Honor, I don't know if I would have made it this far. You know, that discovering the indies was definitely what kept me alive sort of as a fan.
That was a big time for them too.
Right. I'm going to jump in here, but look at some of the names back. You said 2004 Ring of Honor, even 2005. You look at some of the names then, and where they ended up, that's definitely that was a very special time for independent wrestling. And WWE's even acknowledged that in some of their articles on their website.
Yeah, what do you think about that, Mike?
I mean, I don't know how they couldn't. I think that, you know, I mean, that whole, there was so much talent on those rosters. You know, my personal favorite time was the brief run that Jamie Noble had down there. I think I drove to every match that he was on, except for when they were in Chicago, because that's like a 15-hour drive. But anything on the East Coast, if Jamie Noble was on the show, I was there. And I was, you know, and I was a giant fan of Samoa Joe. You know, it was his sort of title run. The Punk Raven feud and, like, Joe on the title run sort of is what, you know, put my butt in the seat, so to speak. And, you know, and then they just kept it there. They kept it there forever. I mean, it's, you know, I followed the company for the entirety of it. And, you know, I don't always necessarily agree with what they do. I wish some of those guys wouldn't kick out of so much stuff, you know, for their own longevity. But, yeah. You know, but I mean, I still enjoy the effort. And, I mean, how can you not enjoy what those guys put themselves through?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
You mentioned Joe too. I don't know if it's, maybe it's just me, because I always bang this drum, and I'm just like, it seemed like it's such a lost opportunity for TNA to not really put a real sustainable focus around him. Like, I felt like he could have been, I mean, they kind of got, you know, really behind him when Angle came in, but then it was kind of more for Angle, and they've tried to do some other things with him, but it kind of just drove me nuts that he was never really the full true centerpiece of that company. That just drove me nuts. Am I the only one, Mike? Am I alone in that thinking, or what is your take on that?
Oh, I agree 100%. I mean, Joe was my guy for a long time, and the very first angle that TNA did with Joe and Kurt Angle, where he, you know, they got nose to nose and he headbutted him, and then Joe stood up behind him with the blood coming off his head. That was, like, I still think that's probably one of the five greatest things that TNA ever did in their entire history.
Mm-hmm.
I was never more excited to see that show. I mean, I think it was a giant mistake that Angle went over first, but
yeah,
you know, that's you know, ego and whatever else. But I definitely thought, you know, Joe, low key. I mean, I remember watching Low Key versus Kenta in 2005, thinking I was watching like the future. I mean, that to this day is still one of the greatest things I've ever seen in terms of athleticism. You know, and it amazes me that nobody ever did more with that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I know a lot of people online tend to complain. To me, it seems not as big of a deal, but, you know, maybe you've got your own take on it. With the fact that WWE wants to change their name, like, who cares? I mean, if they're good wrestlers, people know who they are. I mean, does it really matter with the name? You know, they, you know, Hideo Itami and Finn Balor, you know, Prince Devitt. I mean, is that stuff really a big deal?
I think Finn Balor is a cool. I think that name is cool as hell.
Yeah,
and I don't think it matters. I think ultimately, you know, it's always going to, anytime you change anything in some sort of a geek thing, you know, people get bent out of shape. You know, you see the comic book movies and they're like, oh, we changed the name on this character, and then everybody's in an uproar.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the story's just got to be good. If the story's good, nobody's going to care. You know, when Devitt gets his run and it's good, no one's going to care. And people will forget about, you know, forget that he was ever called Devitt. It's just, if it sucks, then it's just one more thing to tack on the. They'll be like, oh, well, they changed his name and then they booked him wrong. But as long as the story's good, you know, that cures everything.
Yeah. Well, I still feel like people are going to lose their mind if, you know, when they change Steen's name and they bring him out finally.
Oh, the internet will implode.
Jeez. Now, Mike, you mentioned, you know, working with a lot of wrestlers, you know, Lawler, Helms, and all these guys. What's the, you know, these guys, they read your stuff. What's the best compliment you've ever gotten from one of these guys?
Well, I know, like, just recently when I did San Diego, you know, Frankie Kazarian had just said to me, he's like, you know, did you ever, you know, train or work out or anything? And I had spent like literally a day taking some bumps with some guys just to get a feel for it, you know?
Right.
And he's like, did you train? And I'm like, no, not really. You know, I just, you know, maybe like 4 hours of bumping with some guys. And he's like, you know, he goes, cause it really, you know, from the way you write it, it really feels like you're somebody that's been through it.
Wow.
And, you know, that to me was a giant compliment. An independent wrestler wrote to me and said, you know, in my mind, I consider you one of the boys because you totally get it. And that was a huge compliment to me. You know, just the level of respect that guys treat me with. You know, I think that's always been fantastic. You know, like, you know, if I go into a locker room or, you know, if I'm around guys or whatever, they definitely treat me differently, you know, in a respectful fashion. I've always been respectful to them, and I think, you know, they recognize that, and that's always been really sort of mind blowing to me.
Man, that's incredible. Definitely incredible. Well, the book is called Headlock, The Last Territory, Volume 2. As we mentioned before, wrestlinginformant.com/headlocked. It's just a quick link. It'll get you right there to where you want to be. And Mike, you know, as we kind of wrap it up here, the floor is yours, my friend. Give us the final pitch, the hard sell, you know, and let's get some people coming to your Kickstarter page.
Well, I definitely want people to realize that, first and foremost, that if you haven't got to Headlock yet, you know, if you're late to the party, then that's totally cool. You can pledge for the first book. If you can only pledge for one book, you can pledge for, there's a tier where you can pledge for volume one of The Last Territory. There's also tiers where you can pledge for both volumes. We try to make it affordable and accessible for everybody. And then I guess the other thing I just want people to know is, you know, this is the Kickstarters are as important to the lifeblood of this book as anything that we do. Like I said, I don't make any money off of Headlocked, and I really don't care. You know, I have a job that pays my bills. But, you know, the artists, the printer that prints our stuff, you know, all these guys, that's how they feed their families. And so I want to make sure that all those guys get paid. Indie comics a lot of times can be a lot like indie wrestling, where it's, you know, promise of fame and fortune on the back end, and that never comes. And I don't want to do that to any of those guys, you know. It's all passion, you know. My artist is a wrestler from New Zealand. He's passionate about wrestling. He runs a comic book store. He's passionate about comics. I mean, I've told him my story.
Yeah.
Everybody that's associated with the book loves wrestling. They love comics. They love art. I think that shows up in what we do, you know. It's never about trying to get a buck off of anybody. Like, I just want to tell the story as long as I can, and, you know, I hope that people let me.
No, definitely. It definitely comes through in talking with you, and I think you've got a good thing going here. And you mentioned the quote that stuck out to me. It's like, you know, I don't make any money off this, and I don't care. And I think about, like, you know, what we do here. And I'm like, you know, Chris and I, we don't make a dollar from the website, but we do it because we want to provide a place for people to come and get news and not be bombarded with adware and spyware and all this other stuff. You know what I mean? It's just, so I think it's really cool what you're doing. And I want to encourage everybody to go to the Kickstarter, you know, and pledge some money, get a great comic and help this guy, continue to live out his dream. And the final thing I want to ask you is, you know, kind of what's next? You know, do you think that, you know, next year you'll come back with another Kickstarter, or, you know, are you, you know, trying to talk to some potential companies about partnering up? You know, what is kind of the future hold as it stands right now for you?
I'd say either one of those scenarios is about 50-50. The success of the Kickstarters have sort of opened people's eyes. People have, you know, for, you know, the 6 years that I've been grinding on this thing, you know, a lot of people have just told us no. And, that nobody would buy it. The wrestling fans don't read. Wrestling comics don't sell, you know, whatever. And I feel like we're putting that back in their face.
Do you go in these offices with the Kickstarter and say, look, I just raised all this money for this thing. Don't tell me people don't read this stuff.
And, you know, that's kind of what it's been. I think, and we're starting to get a little respect from people. The quality of our last book, you know, Mikel is a fantastic artist, and Chuck Obach, his colors, they make magic on the page. And I think, you know, we can stand toe-to-toe with Spider-Man, Captain America, you know, anything that's on the shelves. And, you know, if we can get the right deal, absolutely. If not, I'm confident that, you know, we can get enough readers. You know, we can do a Kickstarter every year, and just, you know, that can be our distribution mechanism. We'll do another Kickstarter in a year, and we'll put out volume three. I try to leave myself open, but, you know, I'm not going to take I feel like the fan base we've built up with the Kickstarters and stuff, I'm not going to take a bad deal.
No,
so
definitely
I have
not.
A little more leverage than, you know, I'd have a, like, you know, when I first started out, I probably would have given up my firstborn, you know, to get a publishing deal. But, you know, the Kickstarters have given me a little bit of breathing room, and hopefully we'll get a, will get a good deal. And I mean, I got a ton of wrestlers that want to do stories with me. And I got more guys lined up to do art, and we're starting to get interest from comic book people who really like wrestling.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of, it's moving. You know, we're still, we're still one reader at a time, sort of, just gaining momentum day by day, but that's the hustle.
No, I understand. Actually, I just thought of one more question, if that's all right.
Absolutely.
The digital end of it, I know that, you kind of do this Kickstarter thing, and it's, to print the book and everything like that, but have you considered, maybe going to like the iTunes or the Amazons of the world, or is that kind of maybe a bad deal because maybe they don't, maybe they take too much of the cut, or, what's kind of your take of the digital medium as it pertains to your product?
For us so far, we've had a lot of people, like I've been through a lot of different digital companies. We've had a lot of people look at a lot of our stuff digitally, and I think I've maybe made, I want to say $90 in 6 years. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's very nebulous math. Companies, there was a company that we had about 10,000 views on, and they went out of business before they could pay us. So, right now we sell digital books off of our website. You pay for it and I'll send you a PDF. That way I keep 100% of the money. Getting 30 cents on the dollar sucks.
Smart move.
Ooh, yeah.
And it doesn't seem fair, for exactly what they're providing. So, for now that's the way I do it. We have a button right on our thing. You can order a digital book and I'll send you a PDF and, you can look at it in your iPad or on your computer screen or whatever. I think, there's there's two types of people in the world. There's people who make content, and then there's the people that make people pay to look at that content. So
yeah.
I think, we're entitled to at least 50% of that,
Certainly. No, I agree. I mean, in kind of the world that we're in, the podcasting, internet radio world, I can't speak for Chris, but I'm sure he would agree. It's like we always think about being on our own platform rather than being on somebody else's platform. Because
oh, definitely.
For whatever revenue that does come in, we're sure as hell not going to see any of it if we're on. So I agree with you. I like your take on it. You want the digital, come to our website. Not only will get you the hard copy, we'll also get you the digital copy. Come to our website and we'll take care of you. I like that strategy. You're a smart man, Michael Kingston. I like that.
The only trick is obviously herding people into the right places.
Of course.
Like I said, we sell a lot of books at conventions. And, people buy books off the website. Like for us, we really, we definitely need people that want to follow the book to fund the Kickstarters. And, but obviously, the convention and the website, I'm not telling people not to come and buy stuff from us there either, because that's cool too. But, if the Kickstarters don't fund, the books don't happen. So that's our main sort of point of focus.
No, I definitely understand. It's like for us, we don't have those kind of conventions, so we hope and pray on social media. And so far, it's paid off all right. But I always thought, Chris, maybe one day we'll just run out of table somewhere and say, hey, we're a website, come see us. I don't know, but
broadcast live from somewhere. That's a good plan. If you go to if you get a table like a Wizard thing, and they've got wrestlers there, maybe you can interview guys. It's a good, I see people do that all the time. It's a good way to get content. It's a good way to, get out in front of people and let people know what you're doing.
Definitely. I agree. We just started up in August, so we're still laying down the groundwork, and we know that it's going to be several years before we become anything of relevance. And I don't think you're ever going to hear anybody be that honest, but that's really how I feel. It's going to be a solid couple of years before we even get on the map of relevance. But Michael, I do appreciate your time. Headlock Comics, check it out. It's on the Kickstarter, guys. Fund this thing. Let's get it. Let's push it over the top here. And again, just the short link, wrestlinginformant.com/headlocked, right to the Kickstarter, and help this man out and check it out, guys. And Michael, thank you so much for your time, man. We really do appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me on again. It was definitely a pleasure.
Absolutely. If there's anything else we can do for you, please let us know, and we'll be glad to do it.
I like it.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.
All right, Chris, Michael Kingston, Headlock Comics. We do appreciate him joining us on the show this week.
Most definitely. That's some good stuff, too, that he's working on. Because people have heard me say, support the indies, support the indies, support the indies. Especially for our members have heard me say, support the indies. This is the indies. That's what this is. This is the indies of comic books.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely good. Right.
It's a great product.
Absolutely, you got to support this stuff, and because these are the kind of guys that are going to make it happen. You know what I mean? You got to get behind these kind of guys and support what they're doing, because if it's just the big guys everywhere, you know, the more established guys, you're never going to get anywhere. You know?
No way.
So you got to support the little guys. And he's doing some cool stuff. He's got some great wrestlers behind him. So,
yep.
Again, wrestlinginformant.com/headlocked. It takes you right to the Kickstarter. That's the one thing that I always say whenever we do these links. You know, it goes right to their site. We're not making you click through our website first. I'm not kidding when I say it goes right to his site, and you can get in there and check it out. Everything you need to see with Headlock Comics. So,
yep. Just making it easier for you guys, so you don't have to remember some convoluted URL you have to search in the web. It's just right there. And I went to that link, hit it. It took me right to the site. So I definitely vouch for that. So don't be scared if you're out there thinking, oh, it's going to redirect or some ads. None of that nonsense.
We're not trying to pull a ruse over, you know, you guys. So it's all right.
No swerves here.
All right. Well, Chris, before we go for today, let's talk about some news. Let's get a couple of news items out in the open.
Yeah, let's go for it.
First of all,
I got time. Let's go for it.
Great. We'll work our way from older to newer, because it's been a whole week and quite a bit's happened.
Lots happened.
What was your thoughts on The Rock and Triple H's backstage segment on SmackDown?
That was interesting. I thought it was almost nostalgic for me, because I remember seeing a lot of their old stuff, but I don't know, in the back of my mind, I don't know if I want to see him do another match if they're teasing that. But it was fun. It was entertaining for me.
But how crazy? I'm gonna put myself over here. How crazy was it? We were just talking about it last week on the show about the Intercontinental title not meaning a whole lot, and going back to when The Rock and Triple H had their SummerSlam 98 match and their feud for that matter. We talked about that, and then days later. They have this backstage segment. How about that? And for the record, I had not read the spoilers, so I was not aware of those.
No, I don't read spoilers either, but it was awesome to see them reminiscing about that, and then also their early title matches against each other on SmackDown, which were some excellent matches. And I know The Rock's gone on record and saying he really enjoyed working with Triple H for those years.
They had a hell of a feud. And you know what? I know what people are thinking. All right, you got two part-time guys and, you know.
Oh, God. Stop.
But you know what it is? I really think that, I mean, I would be interested in, not necessarily as much as I would be interested in seeing my match that I pitched, The Rock and Batista. Although Batista's looking pretty damn busy, just signed up or rumored to be signing up with the new James Bond movie.
Right, yeah, it'd be a Bond villain.
Yeah, WWE.com posted that. So
they did.
Wow, I was pretty surprised by that. So, you know, I mean, Triple H, The Rock, could they put on a good match now? Probably not as good as what they did, but you know what? If they put that match out there, I'm not going to be against it, because you're taking two guys that are, you know, kind of the older stuff. You don't have to worry about one or the both of them fighting a younger guy and not putting him over. You know, they're just kind of out there kind of doing their thing.
Right. You know? And also, if they did it at WrestleMania is 4 hours long. Nobody's getting bumped.
No.
So
they got plenty of time.
Right. They got plenty of time to fill. So you can still see Dolph Ziggler on the car. Don't worry. But yeah, they could definitely put it. They were talking like it could be main event, but I think it'd be like co-main event.
Yeah.
Obviously, you got the title, obviously. But I could still, because they're both still in very excellent shape, so I could definitely see them both working a program.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to see that. I mean, is it going to headline the show? Is it going to draw the most money for the show? No. But is it a nice little match to have on the card? Sure.
Yeah, it's a nice fantasy match.
Yeah,
because they haven't wrestled together in, what, 15 years?
Oh, yeah, it's been a while. But you know what? I'll say this. as it pertains to the actual just segment itself, their kind of interaction with each other, I thought it was good stuff.
It was entertaining. It was funny. Yeah. I got a kick out of it.
Definitely. Let's talk now about Justin Roberts getting released. How surprising was this, man?
This
seemingly
was
out of nowhere.
And we this was out of nowhere because I just saw something on Twitter or somebody said he got. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, I'm thinking,
what the hell happened?
I couldn't believe it. And then WWE.com had the official posting, which we have on our website, WrestlingInformant.com, which you can read right there. But we just posted this on the website today. He has issued a statement. Chris, it's a little bit lengthy, so bear with me here. I'll try to get through it quickly. But it's kind of a nice little, it kind of tells you the kind of guy that Justin Roberts is. And I met him once, pretty nice guy, really. You could tell that, he wasn't, trying to be, famous or cool, too cool for the room. He was just the kind of guy who, was happy to meet fans, basically.
Right. And you see a lot of photos of him with the fans and just kind of hanging out. And you never heard a bad thing about him. And you never heard him say a bad thing about anybody else.
No. So this is what he posted. He says, it might sound cliche, but I'm truly overwhelmed and humbled by the messages I've received. As a kid who grew up loving and living for professional wrestling, I was able to chase, catch, and live an impossible dream. I was a part of events I couldn't fathom with the heroes I'd idolized from both WWF and other various childhood favorite television shows. Hello, Betty White. For a guy in a supporting ambience role, usually unnamed and unseen, I am blown away by the amount of people who apparently not only noticed, but enjoyed my work. Announcing was my dream until I realized the absolute best part was using my position to help others. It brought me so much joy to bring a smile to a fellow fan's face. The superstars I've announced and traveled with over the past 12 years are not only extremely talented to work year-round and on the fly, but they are also the most unselfish people I've ever met. I couldn't help others without their support. Not one superstar or diva once hesitated when I asked them to meet a fan or autograph or call or do whatever was needed. After reading through all of your messages, I just want to say this. Please don't be angry and please don't be sad. I lived my dream, and I'm glad that maybe now someone else will have a spot to live theirs. Many thanks to everyone I have worked with in WWE, Sue, the company, Jim, and my guardian angel, the producers who have taught me so much and constantly let me pick their brains. The referees, they make it look easy, not an easy job. Security, props, audio, lighting, PR, cameras, travels, TR, catering, production, PAs. My eyes and ears at the bell, Mark Yeaton. Everyone I have met along the way, everyone who has come into my life because of this job, and to those who I have never had the opportunity to meet but have enjoyed my work. I appreciate and am grateful for everyone's support. To Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, and the Authority. Wow, he actually used the Authority there. Who gave me this incredible opportunity. I've got two words for you. Thank you. The journey has been incredible and almost unbelievable. This is the opportunity I've been waiting for to pen the final chapter of my memoirs. That's from Justin Roberts. You can just tell, man. He just really enjoyed his job. He seemed like a guy, is just really down to earth and just happy to be there. So it's unfortunate.
That sucks.
I have a feeling that there's more to this, and I'm sure it'll come out eventually. So... Or maybe it really is just a contract thing. So we'll see.
Maybe it was just money.
I know there's already rumors flying around, but
of course.
We'll wait. We don't report things that aren't, true.
No.
All right. How about this, Chris? I know this is the most exciting news you've gotten all week. John Cena returning to music with Wiz Khalifa.
Oh yeah, big news of the week.
How about that, Chris? He is.
I could
on
say
a
that
roll.
Without laughing. I could not say that without laughing.
He lost to Dean Ambrose on Raw. We'll get to that in a moment.
Oh my God!
And now he's making music with Wiz Khalifa. Now I'm not huge in the rap game, but I do know that Wiz Khalifa is a big name in that industry. And Chris, we have a video up on our website where you can actually get a clip of. Cena talking about the music and a little bit of what it sounds like. I'm sure you've probably played it on repeat several times by now.
Oh, yeah, I got it on a loop in the background.
There you go. So head over to WrestlingInformer.com. We've got that posted there. Also...
Well, hang on a second. Before that, do you see where they WWE put out a DVD of John Cena's greatest opponents? Or John Cena's greatest matches or something?
I heard something about that a few weeks ago, but I didn't know that it was out now. Have you seen this? Is it
let's see, it's what was it? John Cena, yeah, it's on Amazon right here.
Greatest Rivalries, is that what it is?
Yeah. Yeah.
There you go.
It's let's see, Friday. When it is it? It's a 3-disc DVD, 2-disc Blu-ray.
Wow.
I'm trying to see. Yeah, it's just on the front. And you got The Rock, Randy Orton, Triple H, Edge.
He's been through a lot of opponents over the past.
Yeah, he has.
Wow.
Yeah. It was released on the 14th.
Oh, so this just came out yesterday. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, do you know if it's a documentary or is it just all wrestling matches?
I don't know. Let me see. It looks like it's just, there's content and match listings. Let's see. We got, some work with Eddie Guerrero, Batista. It looks like it's matches.
Well,
looks like it's just matches.
My God, we can pull all those up on the network and watch them.
Exactly. Cause I mean, it's a lot of Raw. Yeah. Of course, the WrestleMania, WrestleMania stuff, Backlash. Yeah, a lot of this is already on the network.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of the network, damn, Chris, you didn't even know I was going here. But the WWE adding commercials to the network. Now, the good news is that they're not going to be interrupting the middle of shows, but they will be throwing some at the front and the back of the shows. And also, when you preload, it'll be like preloaded on VOD content. What do you think about that?
As long as it's not interfering with the program, I'm okay with it. I mean, I got the email from WWE regarding that. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I wasn't angry about it. It wasn't a big deal. I knew it would happen sooner or later.
Yeah, it didn't bother me as much. I was all right with it. Like you're saying, I mean, if it was something where, you know, like you're watching the stream and they're showing like, I don't know, Money in the Bank 2010 or some random show, I don't know, but as long as they're not breaking to throw ads in every 10 minutes.
No.
I'm all right with it.
No, because I know they do it during, they do it in the middle of like NXT. I've seen that and some of the, live special events on Sundays. But, I mean, it's all centered around the WWE Network or whatever's going on, whatever big event. Like, I remember back around SummerSlam time, they focused, of course, the entire show we know is focused around the one match, and what did they do with their ads? They aired the John Cena Brock Lesnar stuff.
There you go.
They littered it throughout the show. It was like two or three times, but yeah. So it's already happening, or it's already happened in the middle of shows. But I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Either way, I'm indifferent to it.
Yeah, I know people are going to complain because we pay for this, and there shouldn't be ads. But you know what? Like I said, as long as it's not interrupting the middle of your show, I'm really all right with it. I mean, I'm so used to it, like Hulu and stuff like that, where they just preload the stuff. But everybody's got a different opinion, and I understand the argument either way.
And,
so,
and the bottom line is still a business. They're still running a business. They still got to make money somehow.
Definitely. Let's talk about. I know you're going to want to save the Ring of Honor for your update because they're coming back to pay per view.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll tease that for the members. We do have posting about it on our website, but I know that you'll have more insight on that. So members, you guys can look forward to that on Friday. Let's we close out here, let's talk about kind of the main focus of Raw, and that is now that they opted to announce the matches ahead of time for Hell in a Cell rather than kind of, you know, leaving it up to mystery. Originally, there was going to be the Cena Ambrose contract on the pull match. Held at the pay-per-view, and then each guy would fight again later in the night against whomever. But now we've got they did this on Raw. I kind of understand it. You know, they want to try to sell pay-per-views, and they feel like, I guess if they feel like they have the matches announced, then maybe people will be more likely to buy it. But I could see both sides of the argument. And my other side of the argument would be, I think people would just as well buy it if they had no idea who was going to win Cena Ambrose, because I feel like that match, there's a lot of mystery to that. And to give that up on free TV, I'm just kind of like, wow. And the rating kind of dropped in the third hour there. So, you know, I was like, wow, man, you guys put that out there for free. And now, you know, we know the matches, but you still gave away that first time meeting for free.
Right. And it seems like that's been their MO lately. It's some of these big matches have been hyped up. They're not hyped up for a pay-per-view. They're hyped up for a Raw.
Yeah.
They're hyped up for a cable TV, which everybody has.
And then you've got Randy Orton on Raw this week going into the authorities' office saying that he believes that, you know, he could beat either Ambrose or Cena. So he pitches to them that, you know what, whoever doesn't go on to face Seth Rollins, notice he didn't say loser, but he said, whoever doesn't go on to face Seth Rollins, give me the other guy because I want to prove that I'm the best. And, you know, that's fine. And then he says all this stuff about, you know, it doesn't matter if it's Cena or Ambrose, I'll be main eventing the pay-per-view. And I got to say, Chris, I know WWE's not that stupid. They're not really going to put Cena and Orton as the main event of the pay-per-view over Rollins and Ambrose, right? I mean, come on, they're smarter than that, right?
Oh, you would think. I mean, it's John Cena and Randy Orton for the 10 millionth time. And it's John Cena.
Well,
I would
think that they would say, you know what, this other match is their first time meeting in a cell, that being Ambrose and Rollins. Maybe we ought to put that as our headline attraction. You know, considering the fact, Chris, of two reasons. One, there's been so much emphasis on the TV about Rollins. He's been a big part of the story. And two, you're not going to headline the show with the loser versus the consolation prize, are you?
Oh, no, you don't want a third and fourth place participation.
No, come on now. We don't want to do that, do we?
No, we want to see all the buildup of Seth Rollins running away from Dean Ambrose and not really, you know, kind of jumping him from behind and attacking him out of nowhere and just this constant backstage in this crowd brawling. Now they're locked in a cell and the focal points around the Money in the Bank guy.
Yeah.
That's what the focus has been on. So, yeah, that's got to be the main event, not John Cena and Randy Orton.
But can you imagine the just onslaught of anger if, let's say, like, Ambrose and Rollins opens the show in the cell?
Oh, my God.
That would be a real heat getter, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mentioned the internet imploding earlier, like if Kevin Steen changed. Yeah, the internet would blow up. If all of the IWC would be so mad.
Oh, man.
The YouTube video count would skyrocket.
Would it be wrong for me to kind of hope that happens just to see what would, you know, what the reaction would be?
Wishful thinking. It'd be fodder for some great entertainment for this show.
People are like wishing death on me at this point. But here's the other part that really bothered me about this story. And this is what I'll leave you with this. Cena, after he loses the match, he's not even angry. Like, Seth Rollins is the guy who cost him the WWE championship.
Blatantly.
He called him, what was it, a couple weeks ago, the rubber-suited jackass or whatever it was.
Stupid, goofy, scripted, only on a professional wrestling storyline.
Exactly. So with that in mind, Chris, the way he acted when Ambrose won the match, he was just kind of like clapping, like, wow, way to go. Good match there, Dean. Wow.
Yay, good to go, buddy. He's like, yeah, I'm really excited about this. Yay.
That just blows my mind. Like, you would think that he would be so upset, but there's just, I can't put my finger on it. Is it just this kind of logic of we can never have Cena look angry, upset, complaining? Like, he's got to be very, very much happy all the time, as much as we can get away with.
Happy, respectful, kind of subdued whenever he loses, not really mad or throwing a fit or angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gotta keep the kids happy. Can't scare the kids.
No, definitely not. Well, on the bright side, Chris, this week's Raw did have a lot of wrestling on it, and it's never a bad thing. There's not a lot of goofy, haha kind of comedy stuff. I was very surprised by that. And you know what? Speaking of Cena and all these guys, guess what, Chris? After Raw, if you go on WWE's YouTube page, they announced that there's going to be a major first time ever main event for Raw next week. Get this, Chris. I bet.
Okay. You're riveted. I'm riveted. I want to hear this blockbuster.
Cena teaming up with Ambrose to fight, get this, it's a handicap match against
okay.
Kane, Randy Orton, and Seth Rollins.
What? Again?
Now, what was that, last week or the week before his main event? I think it was last week, wasn't it?
Oh, my God. Have they only done that once? I feel like they've done it like three times already.
Oh, I think they did it once on SmackDown as well.
Okay, so that's probably what it is. I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, they're doing
That's their big blockbuster that they're leading into the Hell in a Cell show with this.
Yes, and Triple H said on a WWE.com interview today that he's bringing the Cell to Raw to show these guys what it's all about. So, how about this one, Chris?
Yeah, this is one of the problems with the gimmicky pay-per-views.
Yeah.
Is that you oversaturate the mystery, the mystique, the Hell in the Cell structure itself. It's supposed to be mysterious, but yet you're showing it every year on pay-per-view, and it's got its own pay-per-view, and you're showing it on Raw, showing it here, showing it there. It's like, come on.
And the other bright side of this Raw show was the nice exchange between Ambrose and Cena. You know, they're kind of very tense and
yeah.
You know, ready to brawl it out, and then, you know, Cena's just kind of clapping for him at the end of the show. Wow.
Yeah, good job, sport.
That's incredible, right? Yeah, good job, sport. That's what I was thinking.
Yep.
Way to go, Dean. Great job, buddy. Earlier in the show, I was talking about, taking you out because I'm a 15-time champ, and Ambrose is talking about ripping the pole down and beating Cena senseless with it, but at the end of the show, hey, good job, Dean. Good job, buddy.
Although I do like the one bright spot where Ambrose teasing him at the end. He's like sitting up there. I was like, haha, I got you.
Yeah.
You can't see me. And then
Ambrose kind of stayed true to himself. But it's
he
just,
did.
It's the John Cena thing. It's, you know, I'm never angry. I'm never upset. And when on the rare moment when I am, like after Night of Champions, I'll just call Seth Rollins a rubber suited jackass and sound the complete opposite of what a real man sounds like when he, he's ready to fight someone. So, I don't know, Chris.
this is the go home show. This is what we're getting on the go home show on Monday. This coming Monday. That is sad.
We'll see what happens. But look,
I don't even know if because Survivor Series is going to be here in St. Louis. I don't even know if I even want to bother going to it.
You got to go, Chris. It's for the job, man. I mean, I'm not paying you to go or anything, but it's for the job. All right, guys.
If it's going to be this big of a turd, I don't know.
Yeah. We'll have to wait and see. They probably won't have Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, big shock there.
But, again, and the other thing I'll say before we wrap up is you and I, we're proponents of Brock Lesnar being champ part-time, but WWE's not fulfilling their end of the bargain because they're not creating an interesting enough story to explain why he's not there. And that's the problem.
It's like he just doesn't exist.
Yeah, I don't like that one.
They just mentioned John Cena. He lost the world title match. They don't even mention Lesnar's name. They're not even really mentioning the title. Yeah. It's almost like it doesn't exist.
I don't like it, man.
I can understand being mysterious about it, but I mean, you just act like it exists and tease it some.
That would make a lot of sense, wouldn't it? I mean, you would.
That would make sense.
You would think that you would cover yourself and say, we can explain it in this way and it'll make complete sense. You could even have Lesnar just cut a promo and say, look, I was the damn UFC champion and I have to fight every month. I'm going to do what I want to do. I'm the champion. I do what I want to do. And that's it. You know, if you want to do something about it, make me and leave it at that. At least you have some sort of an explanation.
Well, and he's got the best voice that I've ever seen, Paul Heyman.
He could come out.
Yeah, he could come out and say, you know, I've been authorized by my client, the one behind the one, and go through that whole thing. He could do that. It'd be perfect.
I would love to. I would love to see that. I'd love to hear that. I'd love to, cover that.
More Paul Heyman is always good.
But unfortunately,
more Paul Heyman is good.
But unfortunately, it's not what we're getting. So,
yeah, of course not. Yeah.
We need to wrap it up. We're right at an hour. I like to be an hour or under. It keeps, you know, any longer, people just go crazy. So, look, where are you on Twitter?
At Chris McManamy.
I'm at Gary Cantrell. Follow the website on Twitter at PW Informant. And again, if you like what we do, WrestlingInformant.com/membership, $2.99 a month. You get weekly podcasts, you know, a couple podcasts throughout the week from Chris and I. You get our shoot interview archive. It's a great deal. $2.99. It's a freaking bargain. Sign up, check it out, support it. And for Chris, I'm Gary. We're getting out of here, man. We'll see you guys next week. And thanks again for all your support. I want to say this, and I'll say this every week, for the people that subscribe to the show, for the people that listen every single week, we appreciate you. Thank you so much, because without you guys, we have no reason to be here. So thank you so much for your support, whether you're a member or if you're just a subscriber of our regular weekly show. We appreciate you no matter what. You guys are what keeps us going. So thank you so much. You guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you again next time.